Well, if you like your jazz smooth, this is the place for you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It is the 19th of January. We are thrilled to have you with us. It's going to be a good day. I think it's going to be a good day for everybody. I can't promise that, but I just have that feeling that it'll be a great day for everybody. It's certainly a good day for me because we have a wonderful panel. I want to introduce them to you. Before I do that, let me remind you that you can be a part of the conversation by writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm just fine. Good morning, my friend.
Very nice to hear your voice. Thank you for being here. Mike Spain was with us yesterday, and that is why he should be with us today. Former
and every day
Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you. And I am so bolstered by your optimism that today is going to be good things. I really hope you're right.
You know, there's a new Apple TV show that's on this weekend. It's The Return to Fraggle Rock. And it's people of my age who remember Fraggle Rock, but it was a Jim Henson production. It was on HBO in the 80s. And they're doing a new one. And so I binged 13 episodes of Fraggle Rock last night, and I'm in the best mood I've ever been in my life.
Oh, that's great. Now, isn't our good
yes.
friend and colleague
our colleague Ira Fussfeld, his son, Matt, is the showrunner on the show and executive producer.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really
wow,
great.
That's
what's
great.
A show,
what's a showrunner?
Showrunner is like the guy. He and his partner,
the man.
Alex, they run the show. They write the show. They direct the show. They run the show. So it's very, very cool. And all of that is fantastic, but it's Fraggles and Muppets, for goodness sakes. So that's
that's great.
Really, really fun. As if that were not enough to keep one middle-aged man happy, Linda Ellerbe is a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist who joins us this morning. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I am just fine, Joe, and I'm happy to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. You were also with Rosemary Armeo, who is an investigative reporter, an adjunct professor at the University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here with Linda, who I haven't been on with in a really long time. Looking forward to that. This dose of optimism in the morning is a little more than I can take.
I have to say, I think the last time Linda and Rosemary were on together, they made a congressman cry. So I will try. We'll try maybe
young.
To avoid that. He was young.
Can you remind us of that incident?
I don't know if we need to do that. It was a year ago. It was right after the insurrection, and we had a member of our congressional delegation who joined us and gave us some platitudes, for want of a better term. What were you going to say, Rosemary? Yeah, and Rosemary and Linda tag teamed the representative.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
yeah, it was great. It was really great. So I'm thrilled. We don't have any congressional representatives expected to call in this morning. So we're good. But you know, you two go after whoever you want to go after. Good morning, all. Welcome to the program this morning. It's very nice to have you with us. Let's get to the topics at hand. And we'll start off with this, and that is the Ukraine standoff. Very concerning. Here's what we know as of now. The Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, will meet with the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, in Geneva on Friday in an effort to resolve the standoff over Ukraine, with U.S. officials warning that a Russian invasion could be imminent. The meeting will follow a week of intense diplomacy as the U.S. top U.S. diplomats heads to Ukraine and Germany for discussions on the crisis. The State Department said all of this yesterday, adding urgency to Blinken's talks as Russia's fresh deployment of troops to Belarus to conduct major military exercises that will further strengthen the number of Russian forces along Ukraine's border. the troop movements, coupled with statements from Moscow that it was unsatisfied with meetings held with U.S., European, and NATO officials last week to address its security concerns, have had some officials in Washington fearing the worst. Are they justified in fearing the worst, Alan?
It's so interesting because there's a premise here. The premise is we're still at war with the old Soviet Union, which does not exist anymore, except for the fact that, as I have said again and again and again and again, the KGB colonel, who was prominent back then, is prominent right now, and is, you know, is knows that, as all dictators know, people like Hitler knew, and the others, in their own minds, of course, that they can do anything they want because nobody else will give them a hard time because they're tougher than everybody else. So, therefore, it doesn't look good. And more than that, it is hard to say what's in his mind. If more difficult times come for the people of Russia as a result of what Putin is doing, then he will not satisfy his own particular political needs, which are that more and more people have been giving him a thumbs down. So it is, to me, a standoff between his needs to be a, you know, a dictator, warmonger, and also whatever's left of democracy in Russia is up against that. So it's a tough time for us because we don't know what we're going to do if he does what he's going to do.
Rosemary Arameo.
Well, I think he's going to take over. He's going to attack and will control Ukraine. There'll be a huge revolt within Ukraine and sustained fighting by the Ukrainians. NATO and the United States and the EU will say, oh, it's horrible, and tisk-tisk, and not a whole lot else that's going to bother Putin, who, by the way, is facing an election in a couple of years to become president for life. This is a ploy to win over his population, which does want to see a restoration of Russia to its former Soviet high status. It is distracting. A war is distracting from economic woes that they have, which, by the way, also are going away because energy is, again, once more in demand. And Putin has to stay in power because he has so much ill-gotten gain that would be investigated or possibly removed from him if he loses. So he has everything to gain. He also likes being in the spotlight. Once again, the United States is concentrating on Russia, not on China or any place else in the Pacific. So he's getting everything he wants, and there are very few weapons at the hands of the United States and Europe to fight with him. They'll tisk-tisk and diplomatic missions, and they may have some economic sanctions, but Europe needs Russia. The United States can't supply Europe with gas. He can. So I see this as a calculated and awful move, and poor Ukraine.
Linda Ellerbe.
Well, there's very little I could add to what Rosemary had to say. She's quite right. I mean, this idea of exporting chaos to solve your problems at home is not a new one. And right now, it's kind of frightening that we are seeing Putin do exactly that with the Ukraine. He's got economic problems in Russia. And the Kiev government seems to be doing better, and the people in the Ukraine seem to have more freedoms, and he cannot let that model succeed. If Kiev succeeds, the Kremlin fails. So you start crying, we have to invade the Ukraine. Well, that's not entirely unlike, you know, meanwhile, China is watching what the U.S. does here. To see what that might say the U.S. might do regarding Taiwan if China decides to invade Taiwan. Meanwhile, the United States has done this very same thing. This is not unlike weapons of mass destruction in Iran and George W. Bush's insistence that they existed, and therefore we had to do something about it. You know, talking is always better than shooting, and the talking hasn't stopped. But this is... This is a political ploy that has worked for more than one leader, and you don't have to be a tyrant to use that ploy. Presidents of the United States have used it regularly. Of both parties' presidents have used it. And Putin is using it very effectively right now because, as Rosemary points out, what actually can Europe and the United States do that wouldn't be a disaster in response to this?
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I like the way you put it, Linda. You know, exporting chaos in order to draw attention away from problems at home. And that does appear to be what's going on. What's really troubling to me is, yes, the talking is continuing, and Blinken is going to, you know, Geneva to talk to the top, his counterpart in Russia. Right now, according to the State Department yesterday, they're moving. Russia is moving troops into Belarus, which borders Ukraine, and Lukashenko is trying to stay in power there, and he's got his own problems, and he's reaching out to Russia, and Russia's ready to jump right in and help him, and they're doing their joint exercises over there. Again, it'd be a strategic place to also stage troops to go into Ukraine. And it is really worrisome. And I don't think that Ukraine, I mean, having succeeded somewhat in recent years, in spite of our own efforts under the Trump administration to undermine their government, it could be a very bloody, a very long kind of a proxy war going on between the forces that Russia is able to get over the border and people in Ukraine, and that is not a good thing for stable democracies in Western Europe. And you're right, Rosemary, it's not like they can just flip a switch and go get their energy elsewhere. This is a really calculated move by a KGB guy, Alan, who is trying to restore the grandeur of what the Soviet Union once was.
Put another way, once a KGB guy, always a KGB guy. And yeah. Also, reportedly, one of the richest guys, I think Rosemary alluded to this, richest guys in the world now as a result of what we might call plunder.
So, go ahead, Rosemary.
Helped himself to the natural resources and the business structures, and he is utterly corrupt. The organization that I worked with for many years, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Center, I just had a full-time Putin reporter. He is completely without scruples, and he is not. There are people who disagree and oppose him, but he systematically wipes them out. And this is calculated. It's the same, very similar to what he did in Syria. He's moved to the Middle East with very little repercussions from the West because we don't have that many weapons to use against Russia. What are you going to do, nuke them? Are we going to go into a nuclear war over Ukraine? What would we go into a nuclear war for? So or put boots on the ground, for that matter. We're going to send troops into Moscow. He knows we're not going to do that. And the EU is powerless because of his control over natural gas. Belarus, he's running Belarus now. The president of Belarus, as corrupt as him and one of his acolytes, is reportedly in Moscow right now, not even running the operation in Minsk. So he is not slowly, but rather quickly putting together the old Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and
go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, Joe, notably, yesterday, Fox News, Tucker Carlson on Fox News was blaming the U.S. for this and saying that we were provoking it and Russia was being perfectly in the right, protecting itself from the aggressor of the U.S. backing Ukraine. Can you believe it?
Yeah, well, that goes right back to Trump.
That's not completely without some basis in fact, as all good lies are. The United States was trying to entice Ukraine, which is Western-leaning, by offering membership or protection from NATO.
and that Russia was rightly concerned about having NATO right on its border. And then the idea was, well, don't join Ukraine, but we'll protect you as if you were a member. And of course, we didn't do that, or else Crimea would be Ukrainian, not Russian. And so there is some basis of fact in it, but the truth is that this is support for Russia from the right. And I don't understand it any more than I understand why the right so lovingly supports everything Israel does.
So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we have much more. We have many more questions on this subject. We'll move on to other subjects, and of course, we'll take your questions. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and we are talking about the situation with Ukraine and what is being done. Let us just spend a second talking about Anthony Blinken and going to Geneva and what could possibly come from that. Alan, how effective can this be, and what do you think the realistic expectations should be?
Well, let's remember who Putin is. He's a dictator. In the end, his assessment of whether the United States and the Western powers, more the United States, I think, is the main adversary here, will do anything about it. We know he's already said we're not supplying ground troops if they go in. What else does he need? The president says we'll really come down hard on them. But as Rosemary said, we do know that the powers, that Russia knows full well that it has a lot of upper hand here. So, for example, it has a pipeline that's about to go into production. It has a great deal that the rest of Western Europe needs. So it looks to me like we're in pretty non-solid place here.
Mike, what do you think that Blinken can reasonably achieve on Friday in Geneva?
Well, I'm optimistic that he can come across as having the support of the European nations behind him, as well as the at least the sense that the United States government is willing to do a lot to make this unattractive in the economic areas. And perhaps, you know, the way these things go, there'll be discussions about things we won't hear about, where there might be some concessions offered elsewhere or some other kind of a deal that might be favorable to Putin that would let him perhaps save face. We've seen it before, and make it and diffuse the situation. I mean, I think all you can do is hope that it delays, buys time, and lets the situation kind of settle down. Right now, it just seems like a powder keg ready to be lit.
So what do you got in mind? In other words, what concessions could the U.S. make here?
How about strategic missiles in Turkey? Wasn't that what Kennedy offered Khrushchev to end the Cuban Missile Crisis?
And they got
And they got it, but it wasn't.
We don't,
it wasn't,
don't have any pull with Turkey anymore.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rosemary.
We don't have any pull in Turkey anymore. Our options are extremely limited. I don't think Putin pays attention here's the thing. There is no situation to defuse. The whole thing is made up because Putin wants Ukraine back. So I think the United States would be better off if Blinken went in and said, you're going to see us funding every Ukrainian resistance that there is. We'll send weapons to them. NATO will go in and protect if we can get, you know, the approval of NATO allies. It has to be answered with threat and sanctions. Economic sanction that Blinken can pull off. That's why he's not going to meet Putin until he goes to Berlin first, and to see other allies. It's time for the United States has to get hard here because Putin's playing all the strings right now. He's plucking all of them.
So what are the chances, Rosemary, that all of a sudden we're going to see a United States with stomach for all of this?
No, I think he's taking over Ukraine. I think that's going to happen. I think he's already made up his mind, and there's nothing we can do. So you're looking at years of resistance from Ukraine, and the question is, what are we going to do then? Are we going to support the resistors? Are we going to blackball him from international affairs? Are we going to do the same thing that he does to us, foment trouble within Russia, pointing out to the Russian people how they're suffering and how they're isolated? And Linda is right. This has repercussions for our relationship with China, too, which gets ignored while we spend time on Russia. Taiwan is involved in this. I think it's time for us to play hardball, because he sure is. Putin certainly is.
Is there any real indication?
Right. And it's not just China. We need to be paying attention. The whole world is involved in this, because if this becomes a military escalation and confrontation between the U.S., pretending it's between Russia and the Ukraine, but it's really between the U.S. and Russia, well, it's going to shake the whole international order. It's going to change things. And because of that, the whole world needs to be involved in the diplomacy here. It can't just be, what is the U.S. going to do? The U.S. is not the direct beneficiary of the gas. What is Europe going to do? What are the other NATO nations prepared to do? The prevention needs to be global as well, if it's not too late for any prevention.
Mm, great point. Mike?
Yeah, no, Linda, I think you said it right. This is a worldwide issue. It's about security of Western countries. There's so many things involved, and it should be seen as a major critical time. And you do get the sense that Europe, as much as they seem to be actively engaged in all this, that they're letting the United States do the bidding, and I don't know, it needs to be more unified, and there needs to be other nations of the world who are worried about it, expressing that worry, and calling, using every diplomatic effort available. This is not a good direction to go, and I hope you're wrong, Rosemary, that it's imminent, that Russia will invade Ukraine, and that Ukraine will be engaged in a civil war with the Russian troops for who knows how long. And that will be a very, very Europe doesn't want that, just from the refugees alone that will stream across the border, into Eastern Europe. So it's really important that they do everything they can when they get together in Geneva. And when Blinken eventually, I hope, makes a trip to Moscow.
Alan?
So does Blinken, I'm very interested in what everybody has to say, but I'm more of an outlier. I think, in fact, Rosemary's right that the deed is done. He's going to get it. The Russians will get their way.
This is going to happen, yeah.
Yes. I think they're going to get their way one way or the other. You've got a couple hundred thousand troops on the border. It's very hard to think that he's just going to leave them there and they're not going to do anything. But he is a dictator. He is a one-man president for life. He is a guy who is going to do what he wants to do. And the Western powers, as we have said, are really in a difficult situation here. Because we know that the Western Europeans want the oil and want everything else. I think this is a very bad time.
Rosemary?
I'm not sure I can add more. I think this is part of a bigger ploy, a bigger play by Putin. Don't forget, Belarus is very much in play right now. It's come back into sway. He is on the alert all over. And, he told us what he was going to do. He said he has called the dissolution of the Soviet Union the biggest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. And he is out to undo that catastrophe. And he has the support of the Russian people in doing it. So,
what can the United States actively do, and what can Europe do? Trump's theories were that let him do what he wants, and it's it's Europe's problem. The European Union is also in disarray right now. It's not in a position to thwart or to sway Putin. I think this is his time right now. I don't think we should stand by and be happy about it. But also, I just don't want to see us sitting there wringing our hands and say, this is awful. And Tucker Carlson is such a jerk. Oh, my gosh. he ought to be really to support him in this is just appalling.
We got him.
Yeah, I mean, he was acquitted.
Could you get Tucker Carlson to come on one day with Rosemary and me, do you think?
I'll see what I can do.
I would pay to see that, Linda. I would pay big money.
I will try. I just wanted to find. We have to take a break here, but we had a letter on that about Tucker Carlson. Marilyn writes, Dr. Cox Richardson reports today that Tucker Carlson doesn't blame Putin for pushing around NATO advances in Ukraine. Tucker, imagine if Mexico fell under the direct military control of China. We would see that as a threat. There would be no reason for that. That's how Russia views NATO control of Ukraine. And why wouldn't they?
I mean, he did say that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Alan, I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I know why you didn't hear me. It was down.
Okay.
That would do it.
I won't ask what was down, but go ahead.
The red button.
Oh, okay.
So Tucker is, of course, a Trumpian. And we know that Trump had a very strange relationship with the Russians, being that he was there, that they knew an awful lot of what he did when he was there, some of which would have been compromising to the guy, and that he and Putin could not have been more on the same base together. So Tucker's response is pure Trump.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get to letters from our listeners, and we'll continue with other subjects as well. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Linda Ellerbe all make up the panel this morning. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. 46 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Wednesday, the 19th of January, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to the letters. Rodney says, what will happen to the Jewish people in Ukraine? Ukraine has the fourth largest number of Jewish people in the world. Rosemary, any thoughts?
I'm not sure that Putin is interested in waging religious war. He goes after dissidents. I'm not sure that maybe I just don't know enough about it. I don't see that as the focus of his attacks.
Let's go. Anybody else on that? Okay. Let's see. Go to Bob. A major reason why North Korea hasn't attacked South Korea in almost 70 years is the 30,000 U.S. troops stationed there as a tripwire. They were also stationed in Germany in the 1950s to dissuade Russia from attacking. Putting U.S. troops in the Ukraine would certainly give Putin pause in the same manner. That would be a risky move, but it's worked before. Stephen says there is no mystery why Trump and Russia support each other. Caucasians, Russia equals white, Russia equals money, kind of basic. This is the sick of basic. Catherine says, what would happen if the U.S. and China sent a bunch of solar panels to Western Europe? The Russian gas pipeline is bad for the planet. Please discuss. Anyone wish to take that one on? All right.
I'm not sure that you could send enough solar panels to make up for the energy that's supplied by Russian gas, first of all. Second, hard to imagine that level of cooperation between China and the United States. For what? Europe? What's in that for China?
Well, they'd make a lot of money. And their economy is now slowing down, so I think they can probably sell every solar panel they're making right now. The fact that it's fossil fuels coming from Russia probably is another reason why Putin sees now as a time to leverage his control of the natural gas supply in Eastern Europe, because 10 years down the road, it may not have the impact it will have now. But you can't just flip a switch and go to solar like that. It's just not feasible. It's not doable.
Let's see. Stephen writes, I was talking with a Ukrainian relative yesterday. He had an interesting projection when I asked about Russian troop buildup. He said Putin is waiting for the Olympics to make some kind of move. Maybe it's an invasion or perhaps just a buildup to gain the world stage by interrupting the games. It is a scary prospect. Is it worth keeping in mind? That from Stephen. And I think I have one more letter here from Joe, who says, while I have no use for Putin, we should remember that Russia has been invaded by a very long list of nations, so many that you can't read them all in one breath, much like your impressive and still growing list of WAMC-related stations when you have to give the call letters at the top of the hour. Welcome back, Linda. Hope you're doing well. All that from Joe. Good point. We like that. All right. Anyone else on Ukraine?
Just one thing. I mean, it's true that there are certainly many Jews in Ukraine, but, you know, Ukraine has Ukraine immigrants have a big presence in the capital region and in the U.S. in general. I mean, and you know, this story is of high interest to the many Ukrainians who have settled here in the first part of the 20th century, and more have come over since. You know, it's an example of how people fled these countries during the Soviet uprising. You know, in the 20s and 30s, and it just must be terrible to watch for a Ukrainian American, you know, an American of Ukraine descent, to be sitting and watching this happen all over again. I mean, it's terrible anyway, but it just must be especially painful to sit and watch that.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We just have a few minutes before the top of the hour, so we'll take this story on quickly, which is that the new government website for ordering COVID tests is up and running. How many on the panel have already ordered theirs?
Here.
I did.
Yep, me too. All right, there you go. word went out quick when the website was up and running and allowing people to order up to 4 free at-home coronavirus tests. It quietly went live on Tuesday, a day in advance of its formal launch, and the demand already appeared to be significant. A combined total of more than 1 million visitors were on the homepage and the ordering page of covidtest.gov at one point Tuesday evening, more than 40 times as many as were on the government site, with the next highest traffic, the U.S. Postal Service's package tracking page, according to analyticsusa.gov, which monitors traffic on participating federal websites. At a White House news conference on Tuesday, President Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, said that the official launch would take place Wednesday morning, but that the site had begun taking orders during what she described as a beta testing phase conducted by the U.S. Digital Service, the government's technology support division. Also on Wednesday, the White House will announce that it is making 400 million high-quality non-surgical N95 masks available free of charge at community health centers and retail pharmacies across the nation. The masks will be released from the Strategic National Stockpile, calling the effort the largest deployment of personal protective equipment in U.S. history. Alan, what should we make of these efforts?
Well, let's remember that the president, President Biden, is not getting big approval for what he's done so far. So the administration does the kinds of things that we've been talking about this morning. And from that point of view, it's absolutely understandable that he is making a major putsch, a forward advance on what the government can do to fight this. Now, if we're lucky, it's all going to go away. If we're lucky, this will be the end of it. But I, of course, don't believe that. I think we're going to be in the soup for quite a while. If it's not one thing, it'll be something else. So I just see this as not only the right thing to do, and I notice everybody on the panel took advantage of it, of course, But it's also the smart political thing to do.
You know, Mike, I'm just wondering, the Omicron variant was officially announced as something of concern on the Friday after Thanksgiving, and it is now the 19th of January. So a cynical person would ask, is this too late? I mean, should this have been done a lot sooner?
Yeah, it's a legitimate criticism that had we put in place, as Biden promised a year ago, the availability of tests to help track and monitor the spread of COVID, it would have been a lot more helpful than now just getting online in the 19th of January and maybe getting it in 5 to 7 days, depending on your zip code and the amount of COVID in your area. I guess they're going to try to use zip codes to prioritize where the tests go first. It does seem, he's being criticized now by not pivoting as needed during the last year. It looked like COVID was going away last summer, and we perhaps got complacent. The one thing we do know about COVID, 2 years after we first had it, is that we can't predict what it's going to do. And you have to be able to pivot. You have to be going at it from all directions. And I don't think the Biden administration has been going at it from all directions, evidenced by not having enough testing available. But in fairness, once you start pivoting, once you start taking the knowledge you learned today and changing the strategy, people start to suspect that we don't know what we're doing, and they get discouraged. And gosh, everybody is discouraged already after 2 years of this. And, people are frustrated. And I think that's what you're seeing. You know, obviously, he's the guy, as Harry Truman said, the buck stops there, and he gets the blame. But it's a complicated matter. And just as he's getting the blame for everything, if Alan, you're right, and this could be the beginning of the end of the awfulness of COVID, as we've already started peaking in New York, as the rest of the country will soon, and then it starts to clear up, people are going to start responding to surveys saying, well, I like the way that Biden's handling it. Oh, I like the outcome. So, I mean, it can't just be a popularity contest. You have to be serious about going after this, and you got to take the bruises as they come, and you got to expect that people are going to be frustrated, and that's what's going on.
Linda.
Well, I have a lot to say on Biden bashing, but you suggested that we are going into a break, so I'm happy to wait. But just an example of it on our show this morning, the notion that Biden should have done this a year ago. A year ago, we'd never heard the word Omicron. And it looked like that we were heading in a different direction. We as a nation, have become a fine circle of Monday morning quarterbacks when it comes to COVID. And we all forget what you all pointed out as well, is that it is unpredictable and that we are learning as we go along. And what I want to do is I don't ever want to forget who stuck the knife in the back of the entire national response to the pandemic of the coronavirus. And it wasn't Joe Biden.
All right.
And we know the name of the person who did that.
We do. I want to get in a little bit more into your thoughts on the Trump bashing. Linda, anything on the...
No, Biden bashing.
I'm Biden bashing. My apologies. Yes, I'm sorry. I forgot about it. I was speaking of our soul mission. as far as Rosemary, of the testing and the masks, any thoughts on that before we go to a break?
Yeah, I mean, I think the United States demonstrably has done more than or as much as most other countries, but we have really fallen down on two areas. One was testing, and the other is contract tracing. which we do not do as much as the European countries. And the reason for that, of course, was a gamble that vaccines were going to just change anything. And when resistance from red states and red governors began appearing, we still had hopes that the variants would be knocked out before they could take hold. So we are definitely a little bit behind, but it's so Linda is right. This is like we're bashing the wrong person. We could just all get together and get vaccinated, stay apart from each other. This would end. I don't see that happening. It's just too politicized right now.
All right. So let's hit the pause button on that. We will get into more of this and on this topic and on the Biden bashing. We'll do all of that when we return. First, we'll take a break. We'll hear some messages and get news with Ray and much more after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Before our break, we were talking about the government sending out tests. The website is now online. There is also the announcement going out today about N95 masks being available to the American people at various locations. That is in the works as well. I brought up the subject of Biden bashing and basically coming from a question that I asked of given that Omicron has been here for 2 months or so, is it fair to criticize the president for doing something 2 months later? And that was what started all of this. Linda, you had some thoughts on the overall Biden bashing and where it comes from.
Well, I think part of it simply comes because this is what Democrats do. We shoot our young. I have a friend who wrote a column about a year of being Joe Biden and on this subject. A friend with the most wonderful, interesting, Lucian Truscott IV. And Lucian, many of you know who that is. And he wrote a column on this subject this week that I thought was quite worth reading, where he talks about Omicron has surged and inflation's 40-year high, and the Democrats are pushing a doomed bid to enact voting rights, and the Build Back Better Act is stalled. And these are all headlines from CNN or NPR. And it's interesting how they're phrased. It doesn't say Republicans are dooming a bid to enact voting rights. It does not say. It continues to. Part of it is just being a Democrat. Joe's poll numbers are down. Yeah, but Republicans don't get upset when something goes wrong. During Trump's administration, he had an average approval rating of 41%. That's lower than any president in modern history. Joe's poll numbers drop below 50, and suddenly the headlines are, he's in free fall. I am concerned. I'm not saying Biden hasn't made mistakes. I'm not saying that in any way. But I am concerned that the media doesn't regularly inform us or remind us where the blame really belongs on a whole lot of these things. And it's the fellow who was president before Joe Biden. It's just like the Justice Department, the subpoenaing the legal team.
Yeah.
Of Trump's legal team. Well, the Justice Department has charged more than 700 people in the January 6th riots now. And now they're going after the legal team. And the time has come to stop tiptoeing around the elephant in the room, which is almost a literal elephant in this case, certainly a symbolic one, because the chief... We know who's to blame for the January 6th riot. Everybody knows who's to blame. Everybody knows who the chief conspirator is, the traitor in charge. And I'm just getting really exhausted with Joe Biden being compared to a standard that is so low and still in the minds of the media, just not making it, just not good enough. instead of concentrating over and over on, it is very hard to do things when you have the governors of Texas and the governors of Florida working directly against it, when you have the Republican Party working directly against you, and when you have a former president who insists that Republicans be like Alice in Wonderland and believe every single day, believe six impossible things before breakfast. There.
So
I had my say and quoted Lucian.
So I want to, Alan, I mean, to Linda's point, a lot of this has to do with being a Democrat. But how much of the negative press does the president, the current president, deserve?
Well, it's a tough one. It really is. I mean, you know, we know what, boy, I don't want to take on Rosemary here, but we do know what the press's role in America is, and usually they come out as the people who criticize whatever is current at a particular time. Look, the United States is not in a great spot right now. We know that. And the press is pointing it out. Biden, of course, is in an unenviable position, the unenviable position of taking over from this despot. And you can't make it all right, but you can recognize that the inflation situation in this country is terrible right now, that everybody's 401ks are going down like an elevator, that it is a bad, in so many ways, a bad time for Americans. And Biden is the president. It's on his watch. It's happening. Maybe he hasn't he doesn't deserve the blame for it, but he sure is getting it.
Two things. One is that tomorrow will be a year that he's been in office. And two is that this afternoon he'll be giving his, I forget how long it's been since his last press conference, but he'll be giving a news conference this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and we'll be running that here on WAMC. Rosemary.
Oh, I have a whole different person to blame. Not that I want to let Trump off the hook, but none of this would be happening if Joe Biden's success rate and his ratings would be up, except for two renegade, inarticulate Democrats. And there's no way to punish them. And directly enriching himself and hurting the people of his state he's not even negotiating in good faith. He just says, well, I need this and I don't need that. And then he gets it. He goes, no, I'm still not happy. I'm sick of that. And Kyrsten Sinema is making money off of her obstinacy. There's no logic to either what they're doing. There's no apparent plan. There's no good coordination. Yes, what the Republicans are doing is horrible. I think the press actually is making a point of how obstinate they're being, but there's a strategy and a logic to what they're doing. Those two Democrats don't get it at all, and we are helpless to do anything. The only people who can change that are the voters in Arizona and in West Virginia, and then not for a while yet. So I like the idea that it isn't Biden's fault. I think he is very stable. He's not panicking over lowering figures. He's such a grown-up, and he's doing what he's supposed to do. I think he's made mistakes, as you pointed out. But he is not adverse to the criticism from the press and even from his own people. A report out today looking at what we should have done with COVID. That's smart. You know, when it isn't working the way you envisioned it, you go back and say, okay, what do we fix? He is a good governor. And the press and the voters in this country don't want good governors. They want charisma and dramatic results. They want a TV president.
Right. They want drama, right? I mean, they like that daily drama that we had. Maybe not the result of it, but to be sucked into the day-to-day soap opera that was the White House for 4 years. Mike Spain.
Yeah, I want to say that I wasn't bashing Biden. I agree that they could have done some things looking back in hindsight, 2020 hindsight. It would have been good if the tests were available like they had said they intended to do, and had it in place back before Thanksgiving, before Omicron started to come along. But they did pivot. And it's not like the previous administration, where they deliberately tried to play down the truth about the virus. They tried to tamp down reports that it was going to come to the U.S. They came out and promoted stupid remedies. They had that idiot Scott Atlas put in charge of the program, you know, the war against COVID. And he basically said, let's stop vaccinating people and let everybody catch it. And then after the people that get it die, we'll all be immune. You know, I mean, this is so different. It is sane. It is calm. It is adult. And we take that for granted. And there is, I don't know, Linda, what you think about this. There is one school of thought that the media is afraid of looking too booster, you know, looking like they're boosting Biden, and they're afraid of being accused of being biased or engaging in boosterism. So they deliberately
attack. I agree with you
Biden.
On that. I think that plays a big role in it, Mike. You know, I do, and I think that affects not just what is being written in various sources and by NPR, as I said, and by CNN and by those who the right regularly calls, you know, the lefties. I know that they're trying to be good reporters, but I think this becomes rather like, not unlike the way we pander to non-vaccinated people and people who refuse to get vaccinated instead of pressuring them. There is this still treating with kid gloves people who don't want to be vaccinated. Personally, I'm done with that. And you see it in the media, and I think, is that because they're afraid of seeming too liberal? If they call the non-vaccinated out for what they are, people who don't care about other people, or simply people who are willing to let this thing go on, or ignorant, willfully ignorant to believe facts when they are presented with facts.
Boy, I hate to do this, but I so disagree with that. That's our view of them. That's our liberal view of them. These are not people. Some of them are my relatives, and I disagree with them violently. But they are not people who don't care about their selves or their own children. They are people who do not trust the government. And our government has given them ample reason not to trust them. These are people who don't trust Big Pharma, and Big Pharma has given them ample reason not to trust them. And for the media to be concerned about how they're perceived, how their bias is perceived, is extremely important. I'm glad they're doing it. And Joe Biden does not want nor deserve to have some bias, some gift from the liberals, from the left-leaning media, to not look at and examine him. He does not need more yes men from the media.
I don't get
Rosemary,
it, Rosemary.
I agree with you, Rosemary, except for one thing. I, too, have relatives in Texas. I know what you're talking about. But the thing is, whatever their distrust of the government or Big Pharma or whatever, if they are refusing to wear a mask, they don't care about you and they don't care about me, period.
Alan?
They don't believe that wearing a mask will make a difference to you and me. I mean, my son, who has COVID, by the way, in New York City, wore a mask, but laughed at the idea. He said, you know, 98% of the people wearing them don't wear it anyway. I myself wear one all the time, but I touch my face all the time. So, you know, we're not doing right. There's a point to what they're saying. And we don't get through to them by hating them. Like, and let me one other thing. Personally, I'm with you. It's like, I don't care if they die. And I get in trouble for saying, I hope people die on this radio show, but I don't. But that's different than being in the media. You cannot project that in the media and be and expect to have anyone read you and look at what you're saying and listen to you.
Rosemary, I'm having trouble following you on this, I must say. We do have proof every doctor will tell you that the people who come into the hospitals who do not have the COVID, who don't have the protection against COVID, are the ones who are dying in overwhelming numbers compared to the others. So I don't understand why we are saying, or some people are saying, or I think you may be saying, you know, they have their rights. They are who they are. And your relatives are who they are. No, they're killers.
Oh, that's not what I'm saying, Alan. I think they're wrong, but we can't say what Linda said. Linda went a little too far and said these are people who just don't care about you and me, and so why should we worry about them? That's what I'm saying. I am listening to them. I think we need to get through to them. Remember, I'm in favor of mandates where you force them to do what the experts say is right. And the Supreme Court has said, no, we can't. Well, Joe Biden is being thwarted in every possible way, by Republican governors, by justices. It's crazy what he's up against. And I think the media is pointing that out. And that we should be upset about. But the individuals who are not wearing masks, I'm surrounded by them here in Florida, they're not doing it because they think that they're going to hurt people and they don't care. That's just wrong of us to say that. And if the media starts taking that attitude, we'll become even more irrelevant than we are right now.
Maybe I'm not following you, but I don't get it. I don't understand why, if the proof is there, if we know that the people who are vaccinated are doing much, much, much better and are much safer than the people who aren't, I don't get what the fight is about here. It seems so simple to me.
The message that what is so clear to you is not clear to many people. My son, again, the one who has COVID, many of his clients are wealthy Republicans who can afford a personal trainer who charges as much as he does. And he sent me a note the other day, and he goes, where is the proof that the people dying are the unvaccinated? And I go, okay, let me send you about 150 links. Which will you believe? The Washington Post? The Texas Department of Health? What do you want? Because it's all there. And I did. I inundated with him. And he goes, oh, okay, I'll show this to them. They're not reading. They are shut off from the media. And that's my point, is that if we can't find a way to talk to people who disagree with us and to reach them, they don't get what to us is so clear, that a vaccine can save your life.
Now, didn't you once at one point, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but didn't you at one point say that everybody ought to be vaccinated and it ought to be mandatory?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, mandates.
I do, and I still said that. Yeah, just said it now. We're not, there are some people we're just not going to get to. The Ron DeSantis's of the world, if he's vaccinated or not, he won't say. The way you get to them is you say, well, if you want a job, you know, you got to be vaccinated. If you want to fly from New York to San Francisco, you got to be vaccinated. If you want to see a play, go into the supermarket, whatever. Wherever we can mandate, we ought to be. We have reached that point, yes. And we're not seeing that, even from people like our governor, who said schools should be open and the mask should be mandated, the vaccine should be mandated. She has not pushed the button and made the mandate real. And even if she does, maybe the Supreme Court will stop her.
Mike?
Yeah, this argument seems to be circular. It comes down to that people confronted with the information don't trust it. You know, and maybe they're not even getting the information in the first place, Rosemary, as you pointed out. But when we were going to talk today, perhaps we will, about the subpoenas from the January 6th committee. And that has a lot to do with a ongoing coordinated effort to make people not trust the election system and not trust the outcome of the election. And it was very effective. Well, people did the same thing against the vaccines and the same thing against other measures to protect us from COVID. And now there are plenty of people out there who heard that and they have doubts and they don't believe the truth, even though it's documented. And, you know, it takes a lot to convince somebody, and you have to trust the person who's telling it to you. And there is a low, low level of trust going on in this society right now.
Linda?
Well, you know, yes, there is this low level of trust, but at a certain point, I don't care. we, the vaccinated of the world, and we, the people who have lost friends to this virus and seen the effects of it and believe in science are really tired of the fact that the disinformation means you don't trust the government, so you don't trust facts, so you get to pick and choose what you believe, and everybody gets to suffer because of you. I'm tired of it. I sort of feel the way the president of France said he felt. The vaccinated are getting very tired of this, and I believe the government should make it mandatory. It should step up and say, as the president of France did, we're going to make your life miserable if you don't get vaccinated.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to go to restaurants. You're not going to be able to ride on transportation. You're not going to clubs. We're going to make you pay, and we may put a fine on you for it. And yes, you have a right to not trust the government or not believe in science, but you don't have a right to pick your facts.
You are so smart.
Right. I think we all agree on that. I mean, I think we've all said that, that the
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement on that. Yeah. No, I'm more in agreement with Rosemary than not. Period.
The problem is that you have elected officials like governors of, as you said, Texas and Florida, for example, who are making it against the law for local governments to impose mask mandates. Or if kids are, when you have that going on, people's heads are spinning and they don't know who to trust. They may not like the guy that's in the White House, so they tend to navigate to the other side because they like what they're saying better. And, you know, it's not about right or left. It's right or wrong here. And just do what's right because it's the facts support it.
Anybody else?
I'm not sure you're right. I don't know that it isn't right or left. I think it is right or left. I think it is right centrist versus right wingers who say the most nonsensical
okay,
things.
Okay, let me say this.
Yeah.
It's...
Uh-oh, we lost him.
Uh-oh.
Right, in this case, right is wrong.
Okay, you have to say that again, Mike, because you just cut out for a second. Say it. What did you just say?
Right is wrong, he said.
Okay, in this case, I concede, Alan, in this case, right is wrong.
Okay, excellent.
The right is wrong.
The right is
the
wrong.
Right. Okay. The right is wrong. All right. Anyone else on that? All right, we have letters. Let's go to those. Quite a few will bring us up to our break. And then just a quick reminder, you can add on to those as well, panel@wamc.org. Okay, we go to Bill. If Russia and China get together and shut off the supply lines, we are finished. We are depending on other countries for everything. Even the frozen food is imported. Paul says, with all the test kits being sent out, there is a use by date, small print on the back of the box. The one I bought have a date of 6/19/22. All right. Julia says, isn't it odd that the moment looming when each and every Republican senator will be forced for or against the voting rights legislation is when commentary on Russia and Ukraine becomes the lead story all over the commercial broadcast networks, as well as the program that you were sharing with us, NPR listeners. Putin's real victory over the USA would be election of Trump. The question to be answered should be who benefits. Then we go to, Larry, who says, support for Israel is not limited to the right, as you say, Rosemary, but across the spectrum, America supports Israel through our own self-interest and because we have shared values. To equate a democratic Israel with a government based on law to the Russian oligarchy is myopic at best and implying some dark worldview about Jews at worst. Do you wish to respond?
The whole support of Israel by the United States is another discussion, probably for another day and one we've had before. The support right for Israel is way out of proportion and hard to explain, I think.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters and we have more topics. Obviously, we welcome you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll return right after this break and, of course, news from the BBC coming up. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning, the 19th of January. Let's go to a couple more letters and then we'll move on here and go to other topics. I applied for the free COVID tests, says Kathy. I live in an apartment complex, and when I applied, I was told that my address had already requested the kits. The post office has a website where you can notify that you're having difficulty getting them. Let's see. We go to Doreen. Don't forget that in early December, Jen Psaki mocked NPR reporter regarding mailing of COVID test kits to all Americans. This is on the Biden administration. Then Jason writes, here is the most certain fact that the pandemic has shown us. Our government and governments all over the world are inept. How many billions have we spent on research and planning for such events? 9/11, January 6th insurrection, foreign policy, and this pandemic show nothing but dysfunction on a scale that would be deemed negligent by any court in this nation. It's not the death of bipartisanship that has caused these issues. Interesting perspective. Pete writes, anybody who knows Biden through the years knows what a moron and buffoon he has been and is. Okay. He goes on and says, i.e., Obama said, never underestimates Joe capacity to F things up. Look it up. Not hard to find. Now he's senile as well. He's as bashable as they come. Anyone wish to respond to Pete's letter?
Yeah, this is a big talking point on the right that Biden is senile and somebody else, maybe Nancy Pelosi or Kamala Harris, are running the government. And I just laugh at this. This is from the same. These are from the same people who saw Trump as a stable genius. He is, yes, he stutters. He's not the world's best speaker. But as we've said here, he's steady. He's smart. He is open to accommodation, even with the most obdurant of party members and opposite party members. He is in office because the American people wanted a grown-up, and he has been that.
I agree with most of that, except that the one thing I don't get, Rosemary, maybe you can help me with this, is that, you know, there's the sense out there that he's a stutterer. Well, I listen to him all the time, and I'm not hearing much stuttering. Maybe it's my ears. Maybe I ought to get the wax out.
He's had years of training about speaking, but he is not an easy speaker. He frequently pauses and appears to be searching for words, which he is, because of saying them is so difficult. But in the hands of people like Hannity, who is spreading this, and Tucker Carlson, and people I hear from, listeners that I hear from all the time, this is evidence that he's senile and isn't with it and is losing it. And the whole world knows it, and we're a laughingstock because our president is demented. And
well,
as
just to be just to be clear, Rosemary, you're not saying you think he's senile.
The opposite. No, of course not.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Let's go to
I would also like to just not automatically equate old age with senility.
Yeah, there's that.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. You know,
of course, that's because I'm old.
make that two of us.
But you know, the thing, and I think Rosemary's so right about this, and it is. I mean, if you were a empathetic, charitable person, and you look at what the president does when he speaks, it's really quite remarkable because he's overcome his stutter. He does take moments to sort of rearrange the words and allow him to go. It's sort of a model of people who have overcome this, and yet in our, as Rosemary indicated, in our current sphere, that's looked at as not something to admire, but as a weakness. And and we saw this during the debates with Trump, where Trump was going after him, and you know, say and would use tactics to try to get him to stutter and seem that like he was going to pause for a moment. And it's unfortunate, and yet that's the world we live in. Mike.
About this. We may at the moment be sitting here criticizing a president for thinking before he speaks.
Yeah, you don't want that. For God's sake, get over
that. I want glib.
I mean, We don't want to see vulnerabilities on the part of people who are leaders, and that's why FDR masked the fact that he was being, brought around on crutches the whole time and metal braces on his legs, because he was right that people would see it as a sign of weakness. And I agree with you, Joe. I think it's a remarkable example of someone who overcame a speech, a speech impediment basically at a young age and went on to be enormously successful in life, and it should be an inspiration. And the fact, as you say, Linda, he stops before he speaks is pretty good.
Yeah, and there was that moment during the campaign where a young a child was in the audience and who had a stutter was asking him about it. And I mean, it's nothing that he has hidden. He's talked about it very openly. And I remember that moment as being really bonding and sort of like, oh, okay, well, so this is really something that we can learn from that experience. But again, you look at how it is turned around. Mary says, Linda Ellerbee mentioned this already, but more needs to be said. The Republicans need to be called out. Why aren't they?
Come on. The Democrats, call out the Republicans all the time for the kinds of things and nonsense that they're spewing and saying. I respect the letter writer and saying you should be doing more, but don't say the Democrats aren't doing any of it, because they are.
So help me with this one, good people. Jen says, I'm curious why your panel thinks that COVID is ending. When did we say that?
If we said it.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish it was true.
Yeah, I don't believe any of us have said that. But anyway, Omicron hasn't even peaked in the U.S., writes Jen, and each new infection gives the virus a chance to mutate and create a new variant, which I know we've talked about many times. We are years away from herd immunity, but I'm curious if the belief that COVID is ending is simply blind optimism, or do they have science to base that theory on?
I believe it's just the opposite. I believe that this panel knows, based on what we have seen so far, that there is an absolute chance that something else will be coming next.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Let's go to another topic, if we can. And that is, we just lost somebody. Who did we lose? Did we lose Linda? Rosemary, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I think we lost Linda, so we'll try to get Linda back. All right. So Mike mentioned this earlier about Trump's legal team being subpoenaed. Giuliani was part of this. The House committee investigating the January 6th attack in the Capitol on Tuesday subpoenaed Rudolph Giuliani and other members of the legal team that pursued a set of conspiracy-filled lawsuits on behalf of the former president, Donald Trump, in which they made unsubstantiated claims of fraud in the 2020 presidential election. In addition to Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Trump's personal lawyer, and a ringleader of the group, the panel subpoenaed three others who played central roles in his effort to use the courts, state legislatures, and Congress to try to overturn his defeat. Jenna Ellis drafted a memo on how Mr. Trump could invalidate the election results by exploiting an obscure law. Sidney Powell, a lawyer who worked on many of the lawsuits with Mr. Giuliani, ran an organization that raised millions of dollars based on false claims that election machines were rigged. Boris Epstein pursued allegations of election fraud in Nevada and Arizona and is said to have participated in a call with Mr. Trump on the morning of January 6th, quote, during which options were discussed to delay the certification of election results, according to the committee. The four individuals we subpoenaed today advanced unsupported theories about election fraud, pushed efforts to overturn the election results, and were in direct contact with the former president about attempts to stop the counting of electoral votes. That from Representative Benny Thompson. Alan.
Now what? That's the point. Point is that we know this stuff. And the January 6th committee is doing the right thing. So they're going to forward it all to the Justice Department, at least by the end of this. The Justice Department has shown no great effort to call a man who would put the United States in grave danger, changes from at least a semi-democracy to an autocracy. Let me just say, I hope we can hear more from the Justice Department on following up on all of this.
Linda.
I'm sorry, Joe. I lost my connection, and I've just gotten back on, and I'm having a little trouble hearing everything, and I can hear that we are talking about the charges against Trump's legal team.
My basic question,
and particularly Giuliani.
Yeah,
and I would just like to say, go ahead, charge Giuliani, charge him with being nuts.
So, how far do you think these subpoenas are gonna get? Are gonna go? And what advantage is it for the House committee to do this?
Well, I the advantage is it's the right thing to do to pursue these charges. What we saw was an attempt to overturn an election simply because their candidate lost. And what we know is what I said at the top of the hour. We know where the center is. We actually do know where the center is, and it's Donald Trump. Now, are the charges going to continue and going to get to him? Don't know.
I think a lot has to do with the Attorney General.
We all know.
I'm sorry, Alan?
I think a lot has to do with the Attorney General. Look, in my mind, after we saw the disreputation, I know it's a bad word, of the Justice Department, I think Biden decided he was going to appoint somebody who would be centrist in his views. He didn't appoint somebody who would do the things that really needed to be done. And I think we're seeing that. I'm very disappointed in what's happening with the Justice Department as these referrals are made. I don't think we're moving. And let me say, we're a year into the Biden administration, certainly, and they know what they have to do. And I don't see the Justice Department doing it. Very frustrating.
Rosemary.
I don't understand. Maybe one of you could tell me why Giuliani already is not charged with something and defending himself in a court of law.
Exactly.
A subpoena from a committee. We've already seen, like all the other Trump sycophants, he will ignore and refuse to testify. So you're right. We're back exactly where we were. I hope the AG is watching this and is doing something on their own. I don't understand why it's taking a congressional committee to bring this out. They are promising that when the American people hear them through a public hearing, present all the evidence, we will for the first time see the full extent of this. I actually think some historians are already putting it together on Substack. You can read the newsletter where for the first time, for me anyway, and I follow this stuff all the time, you saw how systematically from the night of the election, even before then when he was worried he would lose, he was setting up a system that he could go after of the election and get around them. And the fake electors in the fake certification that were sent in to Congress, that fits in Giuliani and the three other lawyers going out into the citizenry and explaining why this was a fraud in their view. That was all set up. And for maybe the role of this committee, which I've never thought was as effective as, say, impeachment might have been, or the AG doing his job, maybe it will for once roll out the full drama, like a movie. Sometimes, you know, fiction is more effective than investigative reports and saying what really happened. And I'm hoping that's it, that they will put it all together. Otherwise, I don't think this is a real major development. Subpoenas are being ignored by the Trump people.
A minute left. Mike.
Yeah, no, Rosemary's right. I think this is, a continuation, but it does paint the broader picture that she just referred to. I agree that this was, as we much as we laughed at Giuliani and the others for these ridiculous lawsuits, it was very successful in sowing doubt and giving a premise for what was about to be a completely illegal coup on the government by delaying and subverting the certification of Joe Biden as the elected president. And that was their plan. And it was sinister. And I think it's criminal. And I think it's going to result in charges.
We have to end there, folks, but I thank you all for being with us. A terrific panel this morning. Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Rosemary, Mike, Linda, great to have you on again. Thank you so much.
Yep.
We will.
Thank you for inviting me.
We will be back right after this.